Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition of May's Pants. I am Dave Nightingale. He is Patrick Vent. We are here to take you through all things Big Ten. We've got an incredible guest for you tonight. I told you a little while back that we were going to have somebody special before Big Ten play kicked off, and we do. We have Dave Rebzin from the Big Ten Network. He'll be joining us shortly. But in the meantime, we're going to try and catch you up on the weekend that was and the weekend that will be. Pat, you guys had a nice big fat win and raised a lot of money for charity with the drubbing that Iowa put on Ball State. How you doing, man?
Good, good. It was nice to come back from a gut-wrenching, heartbreaking loss to Arizona by beating the hell out of a poor Macrifice. But, yeah, uneventful game. We were happy to be done basically at halftime and get out of the rain.
So what was the amount raised for the Children's Hospital up this past weekend?
Six touchdowns would be about $2,500 out of the BHGP readership. So pretty good week, pretty good weekend for us, pretty good weekend for Children's Hospital.
As always, outstanding. Well, I mean, what was the biggest surprise that you saw this weekend out of Big Ten play?
I was surprised at one, Wisconsin's offense, and yes, I know it was Austin Peay, but when you put up...
Or is it PA? Is it like Felix PA?
Felix PA. You know, then it'd be Austin Pye. That'd be the problem with that.
Ah, okay.
former iCub. Go Des Moines. Wisconsin getting 49 at the half against anybody, against the high school team, is impressive. So that and Ohio State just drove Eastern Michigan as they did. There wasn't a whole lot to take out of this weekend, though. It's hard to gauge just how good everybody is when it's – quite possibly the worst slate of in-conference games of my lifetime.
I don't know, man. The one that really, I guess, didn't surprise me as much, because I said it was going to be a close game, but that Penn State-Temple game, I mean, Nittany Lions fan, they'd be crapping in their pants, you know, looking up at Temple at halftime. I mean, that was a pretty good team that they saw roll into Happy Valley, and I don't know if the Owls running back doesn't get hurt, man, I think that might be a different game. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I'd agree. One of my many different side projects includes hanging out over at Slow States with Chris and Kevin. And Chris has been pushing the Al Golden for Joe Paterno's successor meme for about 2 years now, and with good reason. Temple's a good team. They've really kind of built, you know, yeah, it's a MAC program, and yeah, it's a former 1AA from Philly, but... you know, they've kind of built themselves into a pretty decent squad who could rise up and beat somebody at some point. I think Temple this week could have beaten probably half the Big Ten. And fortunately for Penn State, they weren't one of those half.
Well, certainly two members of the Big Ten. I mean, both Purdue and Minnesota went down. And, I mean, everybody predicted Minnesota to go down. I kind of thought that they might have a chance after kind of spooking USC a little bit, but that's just what Minnesota does. It builds you up for a second, and then, you know, pulls the chair right off from under you and cracks your head on the ground when you fall down. But I mean, Purdue crapping one up against Toledo just shocked the hell out of me. Did you watch any of that game?
I did not. It was on the same time as the Iowa game, but I did catch highlights later, and they looked awful. I mean, just slow out of the gate and unresponsive when challenged. You know, Purdue was kind of a lot of people's dark horse pick in the conference, and
talked about that earlier this year, man. Yeah. I mean, they just
it doesn't seem to be panning out. They have not looked good. Two really bad losses and two pretty lackluster wins. But Minnesota, what can you say?
We can say Brewster's gone.
Brewster's gone. The one thing I really hope doesn't happen, because I just want to see Brewster one more time, is that he doesn't get fired midseason, but it's definitely possible. If they could find, if Minnesota could find somebody who would agree to take the job midway through the season, I don't see any reason why Joel Maturi doesn't pull the trigger, because it's only a matter of time at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem that I see going into this, Minnesota's obviously a very good job with facilities, with, you know, the support from the administration, things like that, but I mean, you're walking into a train wreck right now with the way the program's being run and just how really coached these kids are. I mean, you better get it in writing that you got a nice Lycian-sized buyout. just spent 2 years, you know, trying to dig these poor kids out from under the hole that's been dug for them, and then find yourself out on your ass pretty quickly. It's not a good job right now, just because of just how poorly Tim Brewster has done in that position.
True, and and even kind of stems off of Glenn Mason, who was good. He was very good there for all, you know, all things considered, but, you know, was never more than a 8-4, 7-5 coach with him. It's a tough job. I mean, you've got a decent sized metropolitan area, but you also have a very difficult place to recruit from out of state because, the fan base isn't quite there as you see with other northern schools like Wisconsin and, even Michigan, Michigan State and Iowa. And the local kids don't seem to want to be staying, especially the really good ones, like, you know, Seantral Henderson, who said thanks but no thanks and went to Miami.
Well, no, he went to USC.
Right.
And then USC, yeah.
Yeah, and then our buddy Lane Kiffin showed up, and suddenly it was Miami again. But, yeah, it's a tough job. And, you know, that being said, last time around, they had some very legitimate names who wanted that job. Bo Pelini was interested in it. They said that, if I remember right, I think they were talking briefly about Mike Stoops.
Well, everybody talks about Mike's, you know.
Sure.
The Stoops are always in the mix for one of these things. But, sure. I mean, you're going to have some good names kicked around. But
And when you have that kind of pool to pick from and you end up with Tim Brewster, you've got to think that there's something wrong in the selection process. Now, Maturi, the AD up there, might have a little bit of pressure on him, but seems to be in relatively good standing because he's been pretty good with basketball and with the Olympic sports. But they've got to get more. I mean, they need to have I hate to say the Brewster's right, but they probably do need a slightly bigger budget for football. They've got to grow a national talent base, and those things don't happen overnight.
No, they really don't. And I mean, you just look at the hiring. I mean, you could go from a guy like Glenn Mason, who honestly was a very good coach. He just couldn't get Minnesota up over the hump to, you know, and you hire a guy like Tim Brewster on the expectation that you're going to get over the hump with him with really no basis in reality for that. Yeah, I mean, just the step back has been staggering. But, you know, moving past that, our favorite little team, the purple engine that could, Northwestern, continues to roll along at 4-0. Are you starting to feel like this could be legit now? I mean, we've talked about the possibility of them starting 8-0. I mean,
yeah, I think they could. I mean, they could do it. They've gotten over the one big Northwestern hurdle, which is they always drop a game in non-conference that they shouldn't drop, and they've gotten through it unscathed. Despite their best efforts last week in Central Michigan, they found a way to eke out a win.
And they get Minnesota as a reward for eking out that win.
Yeah. I mean, and they follow that with Purdue, who also stinks. So they could very easily be 6-0 going to the Michigan State game, which is at home. Now, with that said, is it particularly likely that they could really contend? Probably not. I don't think this team can hang with an Ohio State or even a Penn State or an Iowa. But, you know, get enough momentum going, pull a fluke upset here and there, which they've been known to do, and you could suddenly look at least a New Year's Day Bowl.
As much fun as it is to watch that happen for the rest of the Big Ten, especially the heavyweights like the Iowas, the Michigans, the Ohio States, if Vince can actually start winning and start recruiting, oh, God, yeah. We're all in trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got a couple of really good games on the slate. I mean, I think the most interesting one that we're going to be looking at is Wisconsin-Michigan State. You're looking at the two best running teams in the Big Ten, bar none. I mean, you can say Michigan, you can say Ohio State with Terrell Pryor and with Denard Robinson, but just pure grind you into the ground running. Michigan State's lineup of backs versus John Clay in Wisconsin. I think this one is just going to be just a drop-dead, heavyweight haymaker fight the entire way through it. I'm really, really excited about it.
I agree with you completely. My team's got Penn State this week, and that's a holy game for us. But Wisconsin-Michigan State's a fascinating game, made even more so by the fact that D'Antonio will be coaching from the sideline, apparently. Or apparently. But will be on site at home. That might be enough to get Michigan State over the top against a pretty dang good Wisconsin team.
Yeah, I can't believe that D'Antonio's coming back already. I mean, that still just blows my mind. I mean, your defensive coordinator is still kind of taking it easy after having some health issues of his own, but for him to be back in the booth a week, you know, 2 weeks removed from a heart attack and having a stent put in your heart, just wow.
Yeah, D'Antonio's a tough guy. Apparently, doesn't just play one on TV.
I guess, man. On the exact opposite end of the spectrum from Wisconsin, Michigan State is Michigan, Indiana, where we're looking at, and we were joking about this before, but we're looking at the possibility of 100, 120 points total being scored. I mean, these two offenses that can put points on the board, I think they're both top 15 nationally in points scored, and both are bottom 100 in terms of overall defense. What's your pick in this one? I mean, I know I've got mine, but I mean, you're looking at this from an outside perspective. What do you think?
I'm assuming you're taking Indiana, you know, home team.
No.
Undefeated. No. I think Michigan wins pretty handily here, although I thought that last year too, when this game turned into an actual, you know, fight. But Indiana has scored a lot of points, but Indiana scored a lot of points against some really, really atrocious opposition. Michigan's actually seen a couple of legitimate FBS, 1A, whatever you want to call them, teams that we at least have a better idea of where they sit. There'll be a ton of points scored in this game, but I could see Michigan pulling ahead and winning by, you know, two or three touchdowns.
Well, you're being a little bit more optimistic than I am as a Michigan fan. I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop and something horrible to happen, because that's just that's what happens.
That's what being a Michigan fan's all about.
And being an Iowa fan as
yes.
well. You guys made it through a whole football game without losing a running back.
Shocking, I know.
What shocked me even more is that Kirk Ferentz decided to tempt the fates by running Adam Robinson 22 times against a horrible, horrible team. Why did he do that?
Because there was literally nobody else to put in there until about the middle of the third. Kirk's got he's getting better, but he still is not particularly happy about playing freshmen, especially true freshmen. And what he really had behind Robinson was a redshirt freshman who up until last week was playing fullback and two true freshmen. So I think the ridiculous number of runs given to Robinson, and it was ridiculous. I mean, you shouldn't be running the ball 20-plus times in a game. He's just not big enough to handle that week in, week out. But I think it was hoping that, you know, come this week you'll find somebody else who can hang in there. And it could very well be the true freshman Marcus Coker, who looked pretty good, although against a really, really bad team in mop-up duty last week.
Well, we'll have to keep our fingers crossed that, you know, nothing crazy happens. But, I mean, that's just tempting the fates. And I got to admit, Ferentz has always had stones for doing the unorthodox, I mean, like he did against Penn State a few years ago. But, oh.
No, that was – I was screaming. The third quarter, I was genuinely screaming at my television. Get him the hell out.
All right, man. Well, how about this? Why don't we welcome in our guest? Our guest tonight is Dave Revson from the Big Ten Network. He is their lead anchor. You remember him from 11 years at ESPN, and he has worked all over the country before that. And on top of that, he's a Northwestern guy, so he's got some legitimate Big Ten chops. We're thrilled to have Dave back on. He was good enough to join me last year on 11 Brews. And, Dave, thank you very much for joining us. We got a load of questions for you.
Yeah, great to be with you guys.
Dave, this is Pat from Blackheart Gold Pants. First question of the night, I guess the big story out of the Big Ten this week has been, last 2 weeks really, has been Mark D'Antonio's heart attack. I guess the rumor was today that he's at least considering coaching this week. What's the latest news?
Yeah, the news today, I guess, is that Mark D'Antonio said in his news conference that he will be in the press box on Saturday. So that means, you know, not down on the sidelines, but actively participating at the game. Obviously, if you're at the game, you're talking and communicating with your assistant coaches. So, you know, it seems like it's kind of a steady progression to get him back to where he was. And it sounds like he's going to be involved with the football operations on some level every day this week. So, obviously, really encouraging news.
Yeah, we were all really happy to hear that when, you know, to find out that he is back as quickly as he is. There have been a couple of other injury issues across the Big Ten this past week and last 2 weeks. The biggest one was, I believe, Chris Borland out of Wisconsin, their standout linebacker who blew out his shoulder. Looking back over the last four games, what's the biggest injury that's hit the Big Ten so far? An injury that's going to affect how the Big Ten shakes out?
Well, I think Chris Borland is a big one at Wisconsin, just because they don't have a ton of depth at linebacker, and he's just an incredible playmaker. I mean, he's a guy who just, you want to talk about someone who gets the most out of his talent. You know, Chris Borland's like the poster child for that. I think the Robert Marv injury and the Keith Smith injuries at Purdue, you know, those two in combination, are especially given that Ralph Bolden's already out with a knee injury suffered in the spring, that's really a brutal combination for them. I mean, you're taking, in essence, the three best playmakers on that team. And, you know, Keith Smith, one of the best playmakers of wide receiver in the conference, and taking them out of the equation. So that really hurts. I mean, I think that's probably the other one that would jump out to me. Penn State, obviously, losing Lou Eliades, that hurts on the offensive line, an area where they haven't been all that good to begin with. Jewel Hampton at Iowa is clearly a huge injury. I thought if he was healthy, he had a chance maybe to lead the Big Ten in rushing this year. I think he's that good. So I think there have been a number of big ones. Injuries have definitely been one of the big stories early on.
Well, we've talked about the injuries at Wisconsin. We've talked about D'Antonio. I guess there's nothing better than to talk about this week's game between Whiskey and Michigan State. Dave, how do you see this one shaking out? Go ahead.
Yeah, really interesting game. I think two teams that are pretty similar, particularly offensively, I mean, in the philosophy of how they play. You know, these are schools that are going to line up and run the ball at you. You know, you're going to see a lot of pro formations. You're going to see the center, a lot of the quarterback, I should say, a lot of the time under center. You know, and I think we're seeing a lot of the Big Ten kind of head more back in that direction, whereas a few years ago we had more teams running the spread. But, you know, these are two teams that utilize the tight end. I mean, you're going to see a lot of tight end play in this game. The difference to me so far has been I'm not totally sold on Michigan State defensively. Last year, this is a team that really struggled against the pass. They've gotten much better, it seems, this year. I guess I'm just curious how much of that is a function of them really being better and how much of that is a function of the schedule. And I think we'll learn that this week. But, you know, look, Wisconsin has not set the world on fire to this point this year. And the Arizona State game, I think, would kind of be a case in point. It's really the only stiff competition they've had. And, you know, they needed a blocked extra point to beat what I think is going to be a middle-of-the-road Pac-10 team. So I think both these teams have a little something to prove. I think it's a really intriguing game. I mean, I'm interested to see it, and I'm not so sure. I don't think Michigan State's going to win it. I mean, I really feel like I think that's a pretty darn good team. Again, I think the jury's still out on the defense, and that'll be the big question mark.
Well, one other team that really hasn't set the world on fire, I think, is Penn State. I mean, they're sitting at 3-1. They were shellacked by Alabama, and they struggled to beat Temple. Is this a team that, I mean, we've gotten used to saying that they're at the top of the Big Ten year in, year out. Is this a team that can actually contend for a Big Ten title as it stands right now?
No, I don't think so. I don't think Penn State is a Big Ten championship caliber team this year. First of all, the schedule's really tough. You know, it's the first team ever to have to visit three teams that won BCS bowls the year before. They've already been down to Bama, now going to Iowa this week, and then at Ohio State. So that's tough. And then I just don't think, you know, I think it's a rebuilding year. I mean, I think they can still be a good team. I think they're going to be an upper echelon team. But I don't think they can win the Big Ten. I don't think with a true freshman quarterback, as good as I think Rob Bolden's going to be, I think, again, I mentioned the Eliades injury. I think that really hurts what's already been kind of a suspect offensive line. And then, you know, the defense has a lot of guys that they needed to replace. I mean, you look at, obviously, Jared Odrick was the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year last year, but then you lose Navarro Bowman, Josh Hull, Sean Lee. You're talking about almost 300 tackles between those three guys alone. As good as Penn State is, and as often as they're able to plug in superstar players, I just don't see the defense being good enough this year to overcome all the other issues that I think they're going to have offensively.
Now, I think we're in agreement that we could probably rule Penn State out of the championship picture, but at this point it's hard to think that anybody other than Ohio State's got to be the front runner. But I guess the question, Dave, is with them kind of guaranteed as at least the number one right now, who's the second best team in the conference? Is it Iowa, Wisconsin? Michigan looks great. Michigan State's look great. You know, your Northwestern Wildcats have even been pretty impressive so far. So,
I don't think it's Northwestern. with all due respect, you know, I think their inability to run the ball is eventually going to catch up to them. I'm not sure it's a great pass defense. So we'll see. I think we'll learn a lot about Northwestern in the next 2 or 3 weeks. You know, I'm not convinced. I thought it was Iowa coming into the year, and I still think Iowa's got a great chance to win the Big Ten. Obviously, the game down in Arizona gives you a little bit of pause. I mean, just to be as all around, you know, on special teams to kind of melt down in the way they did. And I still think that's a really good team, and obviously the schedule is very favorable, but I'm not as certain as I was. I think coming out of, after seeing everyone practice in the preseason, I think I really was very confident that Iowa was that team, and I wasn't so sure that Iowa wasn't going to win the Big Ten, and they still might. But I'm less confident than I was before. And obviously Wisconsin hasn't been overwhelming against anyone other than Austin Peay, and I'm not sure we can read that much into that one. It's just hard to say. I mean, I think I felt like I knew more going into the year than I know right now. I mean, I still think that's really wide open. I'm really interested to see this Wisconsin-Michigan State game. To me, it's the most intriguing game of the weekend. I'm interested to see how Michigan lines up against some teams that, have better defenses and whether or not they're able to keep putting up the kind of absurd numbers that they have to this point. And then if they are, whether their defense is good enough to allow them to win some of those games. So, a lot of question marks still at this point, but I do think we'll have a lot more clarity. I think we'll have some clarity after this week, and I think we'll have a lot more clarity maybe 2 or 3 weeks in.
We've got a great slate of games that are coming up. I think the Ohio State offense versus what looks to be a really improved Illinois defense. I mean, I still think Ohio State takes this one and probably wins it by a touchdown or two, but do you think Illinois has any chance of springing an upset on these guys?
Well, you never say never. I mean, I didn't think Purdue had a chance to beat Ohio State last year, Dave, and they did. So I would be surprised were Illinois to win. But, I think that Illinois is clearly better than they were. I agree with you. I think Vic Coding's done a really nice job with that defense. They're coming off a bye week. I mean, de facto, Ohio State is too, I guess, having played Eastern Michigan. But Illinois is coming off a true bye week. And, I mean, I do think Illinois is better on defense. It's interesting. Illinois has had a lot of talent over the last couple of years. We always say when we go there in the spring and in the preseason as well, that they're the one team, have been over the last few years, where you could switch the uniforms with Ohio State, and if you didn't know who was who, I mean, if you didn't know the guys, they look the part. Illinois has looked the part athletically over the last couple of years. I think it's less so this year than it has been in past years. They don't have a few of those guys who, guys like Jeff Cumberland, I mean, who were just, it never really came out. I mean, you didn't really see how great he could be, but man, he was an unbelievable athlete. Michael Haomanawanui, the tight end, that guy was a ridiculous athlete. They don't have as much of that this year, but I think they may have better football players. I think maybe they got so caught up in recruiting athletes that they didn't necessarily get guys who had great football sense, and I feel like they have a little bit more of that this year. And then coaching, I mean, you guys know, your staff means so much, and I think he made two really good hires. I mean, I think Paul Petrino and Vic Coding were both good hires, and that can help a lot, particularly when you already have some talent in place.
Dave, what's your take so far on Nathan Shielhouse, the freshman quarterback at Illinois?
Obviously a good runner. He's a very good athlete. I have had some questions about his ability to throw the ball, and those haven't necessarily all been answered at this point. I mean, I still think there are some question marks out there. Obviously takes a lot of risks with his body, which I would hope he's going to stop doing, because I think that's got to give Ron Zook some nightmares. I mean, this guy's throwing himself all over the place. But we were really impressed, and we got a chance to talk to him when we were down in Rantoul, which is outside of Champaign, where they have their preseason camp. And we were really impressed just speaking with him. He's a really, really sharp kid, and you just got the sense that the situation is never going to overwhelm Nate Shielhouse. I mean, I think he's the kind of kid who's going to be composed, whether it's in the game in, the non-conference playing Southern Illinois, or whether it's a huge game, going down to the wire at the Big House and having a chance to win that game, come November or October or whatever it is they play them. I don't think the situation's ever going to overwhelm him. So I was impressed. I think he's going to end up being really good. I mean, I still think there's obviously some development to be made in the passing game. But, I would have told you the same thing last year about Denard Robinson, and obviously it was the case that, here's a kid who needs to improve as a passer, and he's done so in a very dramatic way. So I don't think that Shielhouse is that far away. I mean, I think that kind of thing can happen in the course of a year.
Yeah, we've all been rather pleased with Denard Robinson's play up in Ann Arbor. It's been a taking a little bit of the sting out of the year off.
Yeah, I would imagine it has, Dave. Yeah.
We need something every now and then. But speaking of players and quarterbacks that have impressed, Ben Chappell really looks like the real deal running Indiana's pistol offense. What Pat and I are curious about is you've had a chance to watch a little bit more of this than we have. Is Indiana's offense for real, or is this just a function of playing some really crummy teams?
It's really hard to know. And, again, I think we'll know a little bit more this week, although obviously Michigan isn't great defensively. We'll certainly know more, you know, next week when they go to Ohio State. We'll see how good they are. I'm concerned at their inability to run the ball. I really thought they'd be better. I thought that they would use these games against subpar opposition to really get to a point where they felt comfortable turning around and handing the ball to Darius Willis. And, you know, the last 2 weeks, I was adding up the numbers, 708 passing yards, 184 rushing yards. I mean, that's a real imbalance there. And if you can only rush for 184 yards against Western Kentucky, who has the longest losing streak in the country, and Akron, who, you know, really defensively just has nothing, it makes you wonder a little bit as to what you'll be able to do against, you know, the Michigans and the Ohio States. Now, that being said, their passing attack's great, and you can win with no run game. I mean, look, Northwestern made it last year to a January 1st bowl game with no run game. I mean, literally,
no
leading rusher. Well, he was okay until the bowl game. He was fine. But, you know, literally, their leading rusher last year had like 320 yards, and they played on January 1st. So I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying it's not the optimal way to do it, and it concerns me a little bit. It puts a lot of pressure on Chapel, but he is really good, and he's got really talented receivers, and they've started to use the tight end, and they've got a couple good tight ends. So I think there's reason for optimism in Bloomington. I think this is an improved team.
Do you think that's a team that has a chance to make a bowl game this year?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, you've got Arkansas State still on the schedule, so you figure you should beat them. So that's four wins, and really all you got to do is probably win two more games at that point to make a bowl. And, you know, you look at the schedule, I mean, certainly you could beat Illinois, certainly you could beat Northwestern, you could beat Penn State, I think. I don't think that's that big a stretch. You could win at Purdue. So if you could win two of your four most winnable games, absolutely. And I think they could beat Michigan this week. I don't think that's out of the question.
No, not at all. That's why I'm scared.
Dave, you briefly brought up Northwestern's strategy of just throwing it all the time last year. They're kind of doing that a little bit this year as well. Dan Persa looks ridiculously good. 80% completion percentage, already over 1,000 yards passing, 8 TDs to only one interception, and Northwestern is undefeated. How long does the streak go here? How long can we expect Northwestern to keep on winning games?
Hard to know. I mean, I think you have to look at realistically who they've beaten, and, you know, if they were fortunate to escape Vanderbilt with a win. They let Central Michigan back into the game last week. You know, it's not like they're 4-0 and just beating the snot out of everybody, but, you know, this is kind of the way they win. I mean, you look at, you know, the stats are stunning. I mean, last 33 games decided by 7 points or less, they've won 26 of them. I mean, they're just a team that's not really going to put people away, but when push comes to shove, more often than not at the end of the game, if it's close, they tend to figure out a way to win. As for Persa, I think he's phenomenal. I mean, I'm really impressed. I'm blown away by how good he is. Not just the numbers. I don't even think the numbers totally tell the story. I mean, it's kind of how he's gotten to those numbers. And we were watching him last week. And, I mean, there was one drive where Howard Griffith was just, I mean, he was going nuts at how good the kid is. Just his understanding of their offense and his ability to buy himself time and to move in the pocket and to throw on the run and to know when to tuck it in and run himself. He's been unbelievable. Now, again, how much of it is a function of who they're playing? I don't know. Hard to say. But, you know, Vanderbilt's a pretty good defense. I mean, and not a terrible team. And, you know, he really had a great game against them. Northwestern's trying to run the ball to their credit. I mean, they have made a concerted effort. The problem is they just don't have any good backs, and you know, but they're trying. I mean, it's less than, they're throwing it less than they did last year. I mean, basically by the time they got to that bowl game last year, they just realized, look, we can't run it, and you know, they literally threw it, I think, 78 times in the game. I don't think you're going to see them do that for a while. I think they're going to try to run it. The question is just how successful they'll be.
Well, you were talking about Dan Persa as one of these people that's really surprised you. One of the things that really hasn't gotten a lot of talking about with the first 4 weeks of the season is who the superstars are on defense right now. Everyone's talking about Denard Robinson. Everyone's talking about Terrell Pryor. Who, in your estimation, of watching all these games, who's been the best and most consistent player on defense? Who's the Big Ten MVP on defense for the first four games?
I would say it's Ryan Kerrigan at Purdue. He is just phenomenal. This is one of those guys who, until you see him practice, you can't understand how good he is. Because every single rep. I mean, you guys, you know, we go to these training camps, and, you know, sometimes we're there. We were there for Purdue on a two-a-day. It's hot, you know, it's 85 or 90 degrees. You might be in your second practice of the day, and you're doing something that just looks utterly mundane. I mean, it's just, you know, these little reps, and you're working on moving your shoulder through a certain way or how to swing your arm, you know, to get around a pass blocker. I mean, these are things that are just minutia. And every single rep that Ryan Kerrigan took, every single one, he took it 100%. And that really impressed me. I mean, the guy's attitude is phenomenal. And he's incredibly talented. So to me, he's been the best guy. And again, it's borne out in the numbers, you know, again, among the top in the country in tackles for loss and forced fumbles. A guy who doesn't get the recognition he should, but really is a good player. Greg Jones is having a phenomenal year at Michigan State. Everyone knows about him. Quentin Davey's been phenomenal at Northwestern, a guy who's really, you know, all over the field and has really impressed me. You know, Cam Hayward's an outstanding player. I mean, we've got some big-time defensive players in the Big Ten. There's no doubt about it, but you're right. I mean, I think they've been overshadowed this year by how good the quarterback play has been, by some of the outstanding running backs. I mean, offense has stolen the show to this point, but that's not to say things won't return to the equilibrium and we won't see defense kind of front and center once we get into conference.
Now, Dave, the one kind of outlier from the Big Ten so far this year has been the Minnesota Golden Gophers. I can't let you get away without commenting on that situation. The natives are clearly restless in St. Paul. Does Tim Brewster have a chance of saving his job this year? And how do you think they're going to end up finishing this year out?
Well, you know, it's a tough situation right now, obviously. You know, the game that really killed them, obviously, was the South Dakota game. I mean, I feel like, especially, you know, going down to Middle Tennessee, I know they didn't have Dwight Dasher, and they're not as good a team without him, but going down there and winning and doing it in the way they did, I mean, pounding the ball, I was impressed. I mean, I really felt like they had kind of found their identity, and that's the team that he wanted to be. I think that South Dakota game just killed their momentum, and, you know, South Dakota exposed their defense, which is extremely young. I mean, you have 11 new starters from last year. I guess now they have Kyle Ferret back. He was suspended at the beginning of the year, but still 10 new starters, and it's hard. I mean, there are very few teams that can replace 10 starters, particularly a team like Minnesota that wasn't a great defensive team to begin with. And then the NIU game obviously hurts them too. You know, just to, those games, everyone expects you to lose to USC, and I thought that they actually played pretty well in the USC game. As to, you know, Brewster's future, yeah, I mean, I think if the guy wins four games in the conference, I absolutely think he could still be there next year. I think everything's still in front of them. I mean, as he said today, look, we're 0-0 in the conference, and we'll see where it goes from here. I still think there's some talent there, particularly on offense. The quarterback is a good player in Weber. Marquise Gray is a talented athlete. It's just going to be a matter of putting it all together, but it is a difficult situation right now. It's hard to lose to South Dakota, to North Dakota State, and to convince people that you're making progress, and that's the battle that he's got right now. So he has to show progress now in the conference season and show, hey, last year we were 3-5, this year we went 4-4. Maybe you figure out a way to win five, but it's going to be tough to do.
Yeah, it's going to be an uphill battle for Brewster. But one thing I did want to go back to before I get to the last question, just to emphasize your point on Ryan Kerrigan, just because Purdue's been so bad that maybe this has gotten lost. Ryan Kerrigan already has 12 tackles for loss up through four games, and the next closest Big Ten player is Vince Brown at Northwestern with 6.
So yeah, Ryan Kerrigan's a phenomenal player. I mean, he's great. He's the kind of guy who, if you TiVo the game and you go back and watch it, if you're that kind of fan, he's the kind of guy who's worth just saying, all right, I'm just going to watch him on every down and see what he does. He's that good. I mean, and the forced fumbles, you know, he's one away now from tying Simeon Rice and Bob Sanders for the all-time Big Ten record for forced fumbles in a career. And those are some big-time names. You know, this guy is a phenomenal player, and part of it is about talent, but part of it is about effort and attitude, and it's really neat to watch.
Yeah, he's definitely a special player, and we're lucky to have him in the conference. But before we let you go, I got to ask, there are some great games on the slate. Obviously, you got Iowa, Penn State, which is always special, Michigan, Indiana, Michigan State, and Wisconsin, among all the great matchups. You know, if you were a paying fan, and you're not anymore because you get to sit there and comment on them, but if you were a paying fan, which game would you pay to go see this weekend?
Wisconsin, Michigan State, to me, is the best game of the weekend. That's the one I would pay to see. I'm fascinated to see how both these teams come out. I think they're very similar teams, as I talked about off the top, and so kind of this, you know, who wins the battle of toughness that I think this game's going to be. And then I'm just really curious as to how much each one of these teams is for real, kind of where they are at this point in the season. And I think it's going to be a really good barometer game for both of them. So that'd be the game, if I had one to see, would be that game. And I'll tell you know, I think a lot of people think Iowa-Penn State would be the next game. For me, it'd probably be Michigan-Indiana. I'm really excited about that game. I think it's going to be phenomenal, ton of points. And I'm interested to see, again, if Indiana's for real. You know, this would be, people don't realize, maybe they do realize, but I mean the futility of Indiana. They have lost 42 straight games to the trio of Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. 42 straight games. And the last one that they didn't lose, they didn't even win. They tied Ohio State. It was in 1990. It's 20 years ago. Okay, so I mean this would be an enormous win for that program if they could figure out a way to beat Michigan, even a wounded Michigan. I think that's a huge game, and it's going to be really exciting offensively. I'm fired up to see it.
Well, thanks, Dave. Now you've given me a heart attack about the whole game. Thanks. Appreciate that.
I'm glad I could provide it. I'm not saying they will win, Dave. I'm just saying those are the stakes.
Yeah. Well, Dave, hey, man, we really appreciate your being on the show. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you back soon.
My pleasure. I'd be happy to come back, Dave. Patrick, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
That was an amazing call, man. What a great guest. I certainly hope everybody enjoyed it. We're a little flabbergasted right now that we've just had knowledge bombs dropped on us. Wouldn't you say?
Yes, my hair is actually swept back by all the massive amount of knowledge headed to my face. My hair is swept back. Fantastic call.
Yeah, it's definitely a Kenny Loggins song from the 1980s. that was quite stunning. Right, so we'll leave it with a little danger zone in your head, folks, but thanks so much for joining us. Again, our sincere thanks to Dave Revson and the Big Ten Network for coming on and supporting the show and supporting the sites. We will be back next week with our wrap-up of all the fun stuff that goes on. We got a great slate of games, and we got a lot of writing to do, so we're going to sign off. Thanks a lot, everyone.
Take care, everybody.